Backseat Producers, episode number 66, Blazing Saddles.
Excuse me while I whip this out.
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 All right, screw it. Let's get started. We gave him 8 minutes past when we were talking about getting started.
I'm in.
Hey, this is Tony.
And this is Adam.
And Tony number two is around.
Somewhere.
And he will be rejoining us shortly. We're at a bar.
Hey!
Woo! Yeah, we're doing the bar cast thing again. It's been a while. So, is this a first for you?
It is. It is a first for me.
Sweet. So,
I'm very uncomfortable when we're not behind the mics. So,
now you're just behind the water.
Yeah, I'm just behind the water.
See, and unfortunately, we've actually gotten past the point of drinking, and now we're on straight substances because we have been drinking all evening.
Yeah, I would like to go home tonight, so.
We've been drinking for the last 3-ish hours, something like that.
It was a good dinner.
It was a good dinner. Talking to one of the guys from Archon.
Yep.
Got some stuff lined up, so we will be attending Archon this year. And I don't know if they will be. We'll be or not. 10 p.m. on a Wednesday night at a bar.
Nice.
So, anything going on? Anything you were interested in talking about? You said you had something you were thinking about bringing
up? I have a banter topic to talk about, but Anthony's not here.
Oh, we're going
to
wait for him?
I was actually going to ask how you two met, because it's a very bizarre matchup for me to come in and walk in. It's like, he's very... we'll get to it.
We'll get to it when he gets here. It's not that interesting of a story.
But before we go any further,
yeah,
gotta put on the table, next week, Blade Runner.
Yeah, we'll actually let you know right now what we're talking about next week. Do we know what version we're going to talk about?
I've seen it once 10 years ago.
Okay.
So.
We'll pick a version of Blade Runner at some point. We'll talk about it, one version of it. I'm sure if you watch any version of it, you'll probably be okay with the episode.
Yeah.
Yes. It's at that point it becomes semantics arguments over...
How different can they be?
There are some big differences. We can talk about that actually next week, though. And still no Anthony. So this week we're talking about Blazing Saddles.
Blazing Saddles.
And we're probably gonna venture into territory that could be repeated when he comes back.
That's fine.
So this podcast may have a bit of deja vu at some point when he does finally show back up. He's dealing with some work phone call thing.
That's cool. I mean, that's kind of how the bar goes anyway.
Yeah. Some guy wanders off, does his own thing for a while, and comes back.
The same conversation over again.
So, this week we're doing Blazing Saddles in memory of Harvey Korman, who passed away a couple weeks ago. Very talented guy. I mainly remember him from his years on the Carol Burnett Show, working with Tim Conway.
And of course, you'll just nod
your head, sure. Some of our more seasoned listeners will remember the... will remember the Carol Burnett Show. And Tim Conway and Harvey Korman were just freaking phenomenal on that show. They had all kinds of great characters and really funny stuff. He did a number of movies also. Unfortunately, I'm just drunk enough not to remember any of them at the moment.
I'm sure when he comes back, he'll let us know.
He may have a couple more to add to the list, but specifically, we're talking about Blazing Saddles. We've never talked about it before.
I guess I will have to say off the bat, he was the best part of that movie.
He was really funny.
He was
really good in the movie. Though, I mean, acting wise, I think Cleavon Little did a really great job in the role that he had.
I'll agree with you. Gene Wilder just didn't bring anything to the table.
Not what he normally does bring, though.
No. I'm not a big Gene Wilder fan myself, honestly.
There's been a couple roles I've liked him in, but this one, it was more a flavor character. I mean, it was really kind of blah.
Yeah, totally agree.
It really didn't bring the humor that he could bring to a role.
Yeah.
That was a little disappointing. One thing to say about this movie is that there is no way in hell that this movie could have been made in the last 20 years.
The racism is just unbelievable.
It's crazy.
And it's like, I know that Mel Brooks, I know that it's there to make fun of it. I know that the entire thing is there for satire, but it's like, wow.
Yeah.
It's like, there are better ways to make fun of...
Well, you know, we talked about last week in the Goonies how they played up the Hispanic stereotype in the main. Playing up a stereotype is one thing.
But, wow.
But the racial slurs and just
non-stop racial slurs
and the
stereotypes.
And the mean-spiritedness of it.
Yeah.
I mean, it didn't feel like it was in jest.
It wasn't a joke like it was in Goonies.
No.
Because Goonies was the total joke.
Yeah. You are correct.
It was like, wow, that's not even funny. That's just mean.
Yeah, it's just rude and insensitive and wrong. And really, that's the statement of it. Wow.
She also appears to be upset.
Yes. Yeah, I mean...
It's like, I was watching it with my wife, and my wife was like, what have you brought home? And
yeah.
I was like, I don't know, Tony told me to watch it.
Yeah, and I was talking to Julie about this last night that, you know, we're watching it, and she's like, you guys need to be really careful.
Yeah, it's like
you can't really, you can't really quote much of the movie.
Oh, no.
I'm interested in seeing exactly what we'll put at the beginning of this movie for the quotes. I think there's probably only one or two lines that are usable. And probably half of them are involving Harvey Korman.
Yeah.
And his Hedley Lamarr, as opposed to Hedy Lamarr. That was one thing about the movie and the comedy in the movie. And
I didn't get a lot of it, honestly.
Well, I don't think there's a lot to get. And I think I had the same problem with the comedy in this movie as I had in Princess Bride, is that it's comedy through repetition.
Oh.
Repeating the same thing over and over.
He hits his head on the windowsill. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
That's not funny.
Hedley Lamarr. Yeah, we've heard that joke 4 times already. Yeah. Move on.
Mel Brooks is banging the secretary. Okay.
Yeah.
I get it. Honestly, I mean, when it comes down to it, I don't think this movie stood up to Spaceballs. Spaceballs was hilarious.
Spaceballs is really funny. I don't think either of those movies though really stand up as, I don't think they stand the test of time as well. I don't think they were as funny now as they were when they were released.
Spaceballs is better only because the sci-fi tropes that they make fun of in Spaceballs still largely apply.
Yeah.
Blazing Saddles, it's like, I had no reference for a lot of this, and I was like, I don't get this.
Yeah, it really spoke to a completely different generation.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that.
I'm familiar with that generation because I'm closer to it in age than you are.
Yeah.
And I was alive at the time. And hey, look who's back.
Oh, crap. That's Tony number two.
We are already podcasting.
Awesome.
We gave up on you.
That's okay.
I'm sure you want to go home, so I'm sure you're not going to be pissed about it.
No, it's no problem.
So we are recording. So we started talking about the movie a little bit.
Where are you guys at?
Just kind of rambling.
Where
at the moment.
Where are we at?
Good call. This is Tony, by the way.
So what are your thoughts on the film? And then we'll kind of replay what we thought about it.
It's a classic. It's a comedy classic. It's probably the earliest comedy I can think of that I find gut-splitting funny.
Wow. That's completely
really?
Different than what we just said.
Really?
Yeah.
We found it really mean-spirited and not very funny.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, and my point was, it's the same problem I have with Princess Bride, is I feel that it was comedy through repetition. Repeating the same thing over and over and over again. We'll talk about it later. We're dividing up the bill, that's what that was. for the listeners who are wondering what the hell we're talking about. Yeah, it just felt like every joke was just repeated over and over and over again. It's like, yeah, that was humorous the first time, the third,
like
fourth,
joke?
Fifth time.
Hit his head on the window, the main thing.
The Headley Hedy Lamarr thing.
Mel Brooks is banging the secretary. All right.
Well, I mean, most screwball comedies are repetitive comedy. I mean, it's not... I mean, by the very nature of that type of comedy, that's kind of the running joke.
To have a running joke is one thing, but to base all your comedy on it, I mean, and that's the way I felt. I really didn't feel... I mean, there were a couple of shocking moments that were humorous only because they were supposed to be shocking. But looking at them now, they're not a surprise because they're lines that... everybody knows. I mean, because
excuse
the movie's
me while I whip this out.
Exactly.
That's
nobody
funny.
Move. You know, I'm not going to finish the line. But you know, he points the gun at himself and says, "Nobody move."
That was funny.
I mean, it's funny, but if you even have a passing knowledge of the movie, you know those lines. It's not a surprise.
I mean, I don't know. I think the situations are funny. I think Gene Wilder pulling the guns, man, that kills me every time. I don't know why. I mean, that's just hilarious. He's just standing there with his arms crossed, and he blows everyone away, and then when his arms are crossed, I mean, that's just, yeah, that's retarded, but I mean,
yeah.
It's great. I mean, just as an example.
Does the same thing with the chess piece?
Yeah,
what's up?
The same thing with the chess piece.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, come on, it's... You know, I don't know what other comedies you guys like that you think are like great, great comedies that this doesn't hold up next to.
Well, it's the problem is I think that it doesn't. I don't relate to it. Like it's making fun of tropes that I can't identify.
No longer really have as much meaning as they did in that day.
Like we just talked about Spaceballs. Like Spaceballs, the science fiction tropes that they make fun of in Spaceballs still apply, and I think you can probably largely attribute that to the fact that Star Wars has stood the test of time.
Well, and I know that some of the things that they were making fun of were the Westerns, which,
and well, racism
admittedly,
itself.
Well, racism. I mean, racism itself is. I mean. Of course.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there are also, I'm assuming, some Western tropes in there, especially with the fastest gun in the West.
Yeah.
No, in the world. You know, it's...
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of that in there. And I like Westerns, so,
right.
I mean...
So, I mean, so it has a different level of comedy interest for you because it's parodying a genre that you're familiar with.
It's true.
Where...
I'm not into Westerns.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched some of them, but I'm not. I don't seek it out as a genre.
Well, one of the very earliest scenes in the movie is totally gross, but it's hilarious because it brings up a real point. Like, they never show in any Western. Like, all they do is ever eat beans and coffee beans, out on the... So, what do you think is going to happen? I mean, in real life. I mean, so, I mean, that's, you know, stuff like that. I mean, you know.
I mean, again, I think... I just don't think the movie stands the test of time. Because the genre that it's making fun of isn't as popular now as it was then.
Yeah. I mean, you're coming up... doesn't mean it doesn't stand the test of time.
It does not stand up today. I really don't believe that it stands up today, because you're coming off an era when, what, like 75% of everything that was on television was a Western at one point. I mean, and that's hyperbole. I know it wasn't that much, but a lot of primetime television was Bonanza and
Gunsmoke
and a lot of shows like that.
Yeah, I mean, I can see a lot of that. I still think that the jokes about where our culture was at that time are still funny, because it was a film that was made at that time. And Western jokes are still funny. And just because the Western isn't popular now doesn't mean that it's...
Yeah, my problem is that I have no context for that culture, though.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't have the context of the Western, if you don't have the context of the extreme racism of the country, you know, in the 60s, and then when was this movie made? It was in the
late 60s, I think, or early 70s.
Okay.
I mean,
it's still not that far removed from, you know, the civil rights movement and all the stuff that was going on with that. But it just felt really mean-spirited. I mean, really, just dark.
At the time, it was a really edgy...
Well, yeah, and it was
Pryor
a
Pryor comedy.
That would make a really, really edgy comedy.
All of Richard Pryor's material was like...
And see, you brought that up, and I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
That Richard Pryor...
Yeah, I think,
it's my understanding that he probably was responsible for at least 50% of the material.
And I can tell you which 50%. It's pretty obvious.
Yeah, I think if I'd watched it...
And knowing that, it takes a different tone.
Yeah.
Because Richard Pryor
was I'm watching it from the perspective of this being a Mel Brooks movie.
Yeah, exactly.
And thinking,
Mel
Brooks was a dick.
I know, an older white guy writing all that material, but, I mean, if you look at it in terms of Richard Pryor...
Okay, it was Richard Pryor writing it? Well, it makes a little more sense then. And
because,
I understand how the movie can get made.
Right.
Because it's not as racist, and it's more... I mean, you feel almost the satirical slight. Yeah, exactly.
But just as a point of argument, you don't think Mel Brooks could write the same movie and it's the same message that's in the movie.
It's the same message, but coming from a different person, an old white guy, it carries a different meaning to it.
I mean, if Mel Brooks did the same movie about Nazis and
Jews, they do make fun of Germans a lot.
Yeah, they do. They do. Yeah, and I think that the Native American speaking German was just hilarious.
I think the thing, and Brooks does a lot of that type of stuff in his films, is he's really making fun of xenophobia in almost all of his films. And
I will give you one thing that I did find really funny, and that was the anachronisms. What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on around here? You know, I mean, there was a lot of that. Stuff that was just completely out of place. And then they'd actually comment on how out of place it was. It's like, well, no, this is 1870 or something like that. Just like, well, no, that can't be the case, because it's not the right time period.
Yeah.
And they're having that as like a course of dialogue. So I did find that funny. But the racist stuff... bugged me. It got me.
One of the other things is,
not only is it
about that time, and it's about a Western, but the nexus of Kevon Little playing the sheriff was a huge deal probably at the time, because, you know, in Westerns, you know, with the exception of Woody Strode, who I think was in High Noon, I mean, that's the only guy I can think of. And that was in, like, the 50s. That was, like, way back.
Oh, shut up!
I can't think of anybody else that was, you know, involved, you know, that was
right.
an African American in a Western. And so I think they were making that point, too. That
yeah.
It's, you know, well, it's I mean, ridiculous.
Yeah, they definitely made that point.
You know. So
I did also enjoy how he was by far the smartest person in the film.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, far and away, he was the smartest, the most suave, the most
he was the straight
cultured.
Guy.
Yeah,
he was the straight man in the film. Everyone around him was pretty nuts. You know? I mean, so yeah, and of course Gene Wilder wasn't like not smart. But he was kind of like the silent sidekick, you know.
Right.
Didn't say too much, didn't do too much, just
yeah. there.
Reliable for, you know, not moving his arms and firing. So. But anyway, that's interesting. You guys have an almost opposite perspective on the film.
Yeah.
So. You guys ever seen High Anxiety or... I'm sure you've seen Men in Tights.
I have seen Men in Tights.
I've seen Men in Tights. I thought Men in Tights was awesome.
Young Frankenstein.
No.
I've seen parts of it, and I need to see it. I need to see the whole thing. I've seen it, like, in bits and pieces on, like, the local, you know, like, for us it's Channel 11,
mm-hmm.
you know, on a Saturday afternoon.
Right.
So it's completely edited up.
Right.
You know, it's a local independent station that... does nothing but play movies on Saturday afternoon. R-rated movies that have been completely chopped up and edited.
Yeah, probably much as lost in a Mel Brooks film.
Yes.
But edited for television.
Yes.
So, well, that's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I'd be curious to see what other people think about it. Because I know there's a lot of nostalgia for the film also.
Yeah.
A lot of people like the film. And have for a number of years, you know. One of the things I mentioned was that I'm curious on the take on the film from people who are above the age of 30.
Seasoned.
Yes, our seasoned listeners, as I commented earlier, are probably above the age of 30 as opposed to those below. I think that's probably close enough to the generational line for this film that probably in that age that I wonder if there's a dividing line in getting the culture and getting the references and getting the extreme racism. I mean,
right.
I'm of an age that I know of, you know, conversations around a family dinner table where we were over at an uncle's house or, you know, an extended family member who... could match those racial slurs,
yeah.
beat for beat, and not break a sweat in doing it. You know, and me being of an age where I didn't know any better, you know, at the age of 6, 7, 8 years old, something like that.
Right.
Where, you know, you're not really in a position to say, hey, you shouldn't say that.
Yeah, right. Well, I think the other thing is, it's like you're saying, the time is very specific because not only is it before now, but also, it's also during a time that's right after, pretty sure, the Watts riots and the, you know,
yep.
all of this stuff that...
A lot of racial strife.
Right, yeah. And as a result, the Wallace Democrats in the South, you know, basically outright... you know, rejecting what the federal government has decided to do, which is, you know, pass a desegregation program and all this stuff. And so perhaps maybe the lack of acceptance by, the, you know, people
right.
was what the film was lampooning a lot of.
Sure.
Not just in general racism, but the fact that, you know, we're at the specific point where people are just, like, not even hiding it anymore. It's not,
right.
like, it's not even, like, you know, subtle, you know, at this point. It's because everybody's cards are out on the table at that point in time.
Sure.
You know.
That's very much the case.
Yeah.
There was a point in time where it was, like, you know, to be closet racist was one thing. But all of a sudden, it's like you're being forced to not be.
Yeah.
Then it's like, wait a minute. I have to really decide where I'm standing on this. Am I going to accept, you know, an African-American person coming, you know, going to school with my child? Am I going to accept these kind of things? Or am I going to fight it? Am I going to be that person that fights it and says, no, I don't want that. I don't find that acceptable.
And that climate was probably pretty fresh at the time. But I don't know if Blazing Saddles was in, like, the mid-70s? Or if it was in the early 70s?
Yeah, and I'm not sure about that
either. It would be very different, for example, if it was made at the end of the 70s as opposed to the beginning of the 70s.
Yes.
You know, so I don't know. But all right. Have we talked about Harvey Korman at all?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, we said that he's... Yeah.
We thought he brought it, man. I think he was the best part of the movie.
Harvey Korman was...
I disagree with you. I thought Gene Wilder...
Well, Gene Wilder doesn't do a lot in the movie. I just think that gag in particular is hilarious. I mean, I don't know why. Maybe I'm mentally retarded, but I just love that scene where he
doesn't... Not that we're not insensitive to that or anything.
Exactly. But,
it's bad to be racist, but...
Well, you know. I mean, me, personally, I'm not speaking on about anybody else. I'm just saying that maybe I lack...
A little slow
capacity.
In the head.
Yes, exactly.
So I thought he broke.
I'm not trying to make a statement about anybody else.
You rode the short bus.
Yes. So, with that in context now.
I thought he broke.
Yeah, Harvey Korman
did.
I think it was the best part about that movie.
I think he really was. He played his role very well. I thought the joke stretched out a little bit too long with the name. And it was a little unnecessary. It was like once or twice, you know, haha, move on.
Right.
But well, it felt like every time they mentioned, you know, the character was on screen, they had to play that joke.
It was one of those things where Brooks was really good at perfecting the joke that got so overdone, whether it was funny or not, that it just became ridiculously funny at some point. You know, I mean,
and
a good example of that type of humor is there's a movie called The Aristocrats.
Yeah.
You know, which is a film about a particular bit that uses that tactic, you know, about these aristocrats, and it just gets so ridiculous and vulgar, and that's something that Brooks is very good at.
Right.
You know.
And for me, that style of comedy just doesn't do it for me.
Right.
The comedy of repetition. I mean, you know, the trope of the third time is funny, I think that holds true for me. When you get to the fourth, fifth, and sixth time, it's like, move on. You know, the one thing that's a truism of Saturday Night Live, 90% of their jokes, or 90% of the skits are really funny if you cut the last 2 minutes off of them.
Well, yeah.
They take the joke a little too far. They try to milk one more laugh out of it.
And it's just so much louder.
Yeah.
If it's loud and you repeat it, it's funny.
Well, are you saying, like, for example, the cowbell skit?
Okay, that was gold.
No, that one was funny, but...
That's based on repetition.
Yeah, it's based on repetition.
It is.
But it's got the walk in it, so... Like, the walk-in's strong enough to carry.
Okay, but you're saying... It was interesting to me, because I think that the actual cowball part of it is hilarious. I mean, I think the idea that this guy just keeps hitting his cowbell over and over again.
Well, the ridiculousness of the cowbell being the thing is the funny in that.
Right.
I mean, it's just the absurdity of the moment. But... And at the same time, you if you think about it, that you know that somebody is doing that. You know that there is some producer and some soundstage going, we need one more cling on that triangle.
Right.
Do it again. Do it again. Do it again.
But I would say it's not only that. If he hit the cowbell three times in the whole song, it wouldn't be funny. It's the fact that he hits it on every downbeat there is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's awesome.
I think the funniest is when he's hitting it and he starts dancing across the stage. I mean, when he really gets into the cowbell, that's what kills me every time.
I mean, really, explore the space.
Gentlemen, I put my pants on like the rest of you, one leg at a time.
Oh, man.
But once my pants are on, I make gold records. That was such a great skit.
The way to segue this back into Corman is... Corman was a regular on the Carol Burnett Show,
yeah,
which was a big variety show in the 70s.
And,
very funny.
And that, I mean, for me, from my experience, that was how I really knew Harvey Corman.
Okay.
That was my real big experience to him.
Oh, you're right.
You're great. That was my real big exposure to him.
And that's probably the best way to have experience Corman stuff.
I think so.
Because the only other way I know him is through Mel Brooks movies, and he's in High Anxiety, and he's funny in it. He's opposite Floris Leachman in that movie, and he's funny, but the Carol Burnett stuff was really great.
What I loved about the Carol Burnett stuff is when him and Tim Conway got together, and one of them would start cracking up. And I mean, they recorded all this stuff. You know, it was recorded live in front of an audience. So it wasn't like they did sketches and they'd do
right.
it over and over again
right.
to get it right. And it wasn't like Saturday Night Live where they did things, you know, they had dress rehearsals and they got everything down and everything was really professional. And
right.
occasionally you'd see somebody crack up. No.
And they were really professional comedians as a matter of trade.
Yes, they were.
Not performance actors as much. I mean, even though that went into it, they were comedians as trade, and that was, you know.
But they would also do things on the fly just to mess with the other guy.
Right.
And
right.
get him to crack up, to try to get him to buzz.
And that's part of the trade.
And that was brilliant.
Ad-libbing and you know, putting
each
other on.
And they were those guys in particular, but I mean everybody on that crew was just great.
Yeah.
But those guys in particular always stood out for me.
Yeah, those guys, that was a great show.
Yeah.
And when did that run? Did that run prior to Saturday Night Live or during with?
Probably during, because it ran for a long time. I remember watching it live.
Okay.
Or at the very least in reruns, but I'm pretty sure it was live
in late 70s to early 80s.
Probably.
Yeah.
That's probably about right. I'm not remembering specifics. So... I don't think we're really going to have any spoilers in this. I don't think we're going to break
probably
for the
not.
Spoilers.
Well, we're half an hour in. That's a good note.
Well, I mean, there's not really any spoilers to this. It's a comedy.
It's comedy.
I mean, there's comedies, unless there's something completely insane that happens, there's not
Well, unless they're building up to one big joke for 2 hours, you're not going to spoil
No. No, and I think, you know, even in the spoiler of the ending, I did like... moving through the fourth wall and that was ridiculous and funny in how ridiculous it was. But I think by that point I was just kind of had a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah.
Because of the racist stuff. And it just bugged me. It was hard for me to get past.
Fair enough.
And I think in that way it was good, not as a comedy, but as a social statement.
Yeah, as a social satire.
I think it really worked in that respect. Because it made me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It made me feel...
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's supposed to make you feel uncomfortable.
And it did. It worked in that.
It was the line between... I forget who it was that said the line between, like, humor and either fear or complete discomfort is very fine line.
Oh, sure.
I mean, it's, you know...
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, comedy is born out of fear.
Right.
In an uncomfortable situation.
Right.
Yeah, totally.
So, moving back to the banter topic that was broached, but we couldn't really go into it because you weren't here.
Yeah, so how did you two meet? Because I've been thinking about this.
You and Tony?
Yeah, I'm like trying to work this out because it's like, you're like my age. And Tony is significantly older than we are. Sorry, Tony. But.
Numbers don't lie.
It just seems like an unlikely pairing.
Well. Well,
the answer's quite simple.
She has work at the same place?
No. We both worked for Blackwater in an operation down in Basra. No, we met at a writers group meeting, and it was one of the first meetings.
Oh, the St. Louis writers?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
yeah. That's how we met.
At the time, he was not the organizer, and this lady Markle was, and
right.
And when our first meeting, there was just four of us, I think.
Yeah, something
and
like that.
I think it was Markle, myself, you, and Mike. We're the only
Brian
four.
Ryan.
And Brian Ryan. Yes. Yes.
That guy.
That guy. he's probably writing a Blazing Saddles sequel right now.
Probably
anyway.
Is.
So,
but unintentionally. unintentionally.
But he's writing
he probably
it as
thinks
a,
it's a drama.
Yes. So anyway.
A romantic drama.
So anyway, long story short, that's how we met. And then he became the organizer and hanging all the time. And then I was trying to do a podcast with a buddy of mine, but he wasn't serious. And he had mentioned he wanted to get into it. So we paired up, started doing the podcast. So.
That's
yeah.
Cool.
Show Me Con 2 years ago. Well, April of 2006. I went over to his place after on Sunday after Show Me Con, and had my copy of Podcasting for Dummies with me, and we cracked
Team Morris original.
That's right. It's before I knew him, we cracked open a couple of beers, and we had the intention of doing Fanboy Smackdown in its original
format.
Idea. Yeah, in the original format. And we recorded two episodes that day.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first two episodes we ended up releasing.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And we ended up holding on to him for, it was like a week or two, I think, if memory serves, before we actually released him.
Yeah, at that time we were doing three or four episodes, maybe sometimes in a one-shot all-day deal. And then we would...
Normally we would record about
over the month.
Normally we would record about three episodes at a time, but only release two of them because normally by the third one we were so drunk and incoherent.
Yeah, the third one was
completely ridiculous, and it was mostly like, "What do you want to talk about, man? I don't know, movies, I guess.
That movie on TV was cool. I don't remember what it was.
It was like awesome. It was the most ridiculously mellow, incoherent trash.
That's awesome.
It would be hilarious if we still had some of those files. We even recorded one that we called the secret one. And I don't remember.
I think it was just us talking about our favorite movies or something.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was just like we interviewed each other. It was ridiculous. It was horrible. It was so meta and just self-serving. And we're like, people are gonna be interested in this. We'll hide it somewhere on the webpage, and it will be like special content. And like, we'll put something at the end of it, and if people find it and email us, we'll give them a free T-shirt. I
mean, we were adults when we did this too. It was pretty amazing.
And we were, and I think the plan happened after about a 6-pack each,
probably.
That was like the first hour of recording.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
All right, that's my
banter. I'd like to say one other thing that's unrelated. It's kind of serious, actually. And I didn't expect to have to say this episode, but since we're doing one in memory of Harvey Korman, I was a huge, 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 huge fan of Tim Russert.
Oh.
I used to watch, as recent as last week.
Yeah.
I watched him every morning at 8 in the morning. He and Bob Woodward, in my opinion, are like the greatest journalists of our time, and he's going to be missed, man. That guy was awesome, and there's nobody that's going to replace him because he was the last neutral television journalist.
He got me interested in the last political election.
Yeah.
He made it interesting.
Oh, yeah.
In 2004 and 2000, it was his approach, just real... honest, straightforward. You could tell the guy knew what he was talking about, but he put it in such plain language and made it so accessible to so many people. I mean, and I knew, I mean, I'm educated enough to know about the Electoral College and all that.
Right.
But he broke it down and explained it to people who were getting up in arms about the
the populist vote versus the electoral votes and all that. Brilliant dude.
Yeah. He had always fair.
Horrible loss.
Yeah. And, you know, I have some 50 hours of Meet the Press podcast if you guys want to sit down sometime and just digest them all. It'll be great. I got to see him speak about 3 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And it's amazing how normal he is. He's probably the most normal guy in television.
Yeah.
You know, and
there have been a lot of big losses lately.
Yeah, Sidney Pollack, we talked about.
And we talked about maybe doing an episode on the Sidney Pollack flick, which,
yeah,
you know, I still like to do an episode on Tootsie.
Yeah.
I think that'd be a great one to do.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, it was, there have been a couple of the gender-bending kind of movies, but I think that one was before, I believe it was before Mrs. Doubtfire.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was well before Mrs. Doubtfire, now that I remember. And it was, it's a great
it's
movie.
Not
it was
before
the first,
Some Like It Hot.
No. That's another good one, though. It is another really good movie.
Yeah.
In fact, we could probably
do
one podcast on those three films, just kind of comparing and contrasting them. But it was also the first movie that Sidney Pollack put himself in.
Yep.
Because he was
mainly a good actor, too.
He is.
Yeah.
Really good. And just in the last day or two, we've lost Stan Winston. Special effects god. I mean, he designed the endoskeleton for the Terminator.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he designed. He was one of the designers on Iron Man's armor. I mean, he's done everything. He was one of the designers for Jurassic Park.
Oh, wow!
Terminator 2 or Terminator Aliens. And he's just done a number of big science fiction movies and a lot of smaller ones too, but he passed away in just the last couple of days, and just today Edward posted a nice little bit for Stan Winston.
Cool.
Yeah, it's the entertainment community's been getting hit kind of hard.
Getting hit pretty hard. Yeah, I mean, but you know,
it happens.
Yeah, you can't live forever.
Nope. Well, you know, if you're the Highlander, you can.
Yes, that's true.
As long as you kill all the rest.
And as long as you quicken regularly.
And as long as there's only one movie, and there can be only one, and then another one, and then another one.
No. We're okay, thank you.
So, there you go.
Alright,
next week, Blade Runner.
Yeah, if you just got nothing else, I gotta pee and I wanna go home to sleep. So.
Alright. This one will probably be a little bit shorter, but that's cool.
That's okay.
The last couple have been pretty long.
That's true.
We'll try and make it up to all you paying subscribers next week. So.
That's right. See you next week for Blade Runner.
Have a good night.